First and foremost, a big yasher klach to the Sheldon family. On a Thursday night, not everybody is prepared to host the shir in their home. And the fact that a husband and wife are in agreement and having such a thing happen, Shem should help that the learning should bring bracha and simcha and hatzlacha to the family, to the neighbors and friends, to everybody. The topic we're going to speak about is holy, healthy eating, based on Rabbi Nachman's teachings. Both Rabbi Nachman and Rav Nosson stress that Hashem created a huge, huge world, not just the world, but worlds. And everything that he created, of all the different things that he created, nothing is competing with human beings. All the angels, among the angels, there's levels. There's not one type of angel. There's srofim, chayoi, soifanim, levels upon levels. And even the Gemara in Chagiga gives us a little bit of an insight as to how vast the differences are between angels on one level. The toe of the angel on a higher level is thousands of times greater than the whole angel below him, and so on and so forth. And in this world, Hashem created four levels, inanimate objects, stones. There are rocks, stones that are worth tens of millions of dollars, diamonds, different kinds of expensive stones, and there are plants, all kinds of extraordinary plants, and then there are animals, and the highest level of creation is man. And the most significant, the purpose of the entire creation is man. Why? What makes us the most special thing in existence of everything that Hashem created? The fact that we have something that nothing else has. We have bechira. We have free choice. We have the ability to comply with the will of Hashem, and we have the ability to go against the will of Hashem. An angel can't do that. An animal can't do that. A snake cannot bite unless it's given a direct command by Hashem. And a human being can bite, going against the will of Hashem, chas v'shalom. And this is what puts us in a position to show a level of respect for Hashem, to crown Hashem more so than anything else in the world. Because if a person walks into a room with a submachine gun and says, everyone here is in agreement that I'm king, right? And everybody shakes, yes, 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 of course. We know it's a joke. King nothing. Put away the gun, we'll see who's accepting your authority and who isn't. So when people don't have the option of accepting or rejecting someone's authority, he's not really king. All the dictators and all these, we see what happens very often. One minute he's on top and the next minute they hang him, they do all kinds of things, as we've seen throughout history. So therefore, it's only we human beings who have this free choice. When a human being chooses to seek out Hashem and to study, why did Hashem create us? What is our mission? What does he want us to do? What he doesn't want us to do? And tries to put in the effort to work against the forces that oppose us, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and all the different obstacles that a person has in this world from coming close to Hashem. When a person does that, that's what really glorifies Hashem. That's what really crowns Hashem. And the most important aspect of that is the fact that we are a unique combination of two complete opposites, a soul, a neshama, a nefesh, different terms that are used to refer to the soul, which is spiritual, which has nothing to do with food, sleep, nothing physical about it at all. It's on a much higher spiritual level than angels. Rabbi Nachman writes this in the beginning of chapter 24 in Likutei Moran, quoting all this form, and made up of a body which is made from earth. The lowest, lowest in the four elements of creation, fire, water, air, and offer. Man is called Adam to remind us that we come from Adama, from earth, from ground. And Hashem did the most incredible thing in the world to put together a soul, the highest, most spiritual item in existence other than Hashem, Kaviyachol, and a body among the lowest forms in creation. And it's only by both of them being able to operate together that we have the ability to perform mitzvahs, to serve Hashem. It's only the combination of these two. What unites these two? Food. Food. A person eats, it sustains the body and it sustains the soul, and they stay happily married, and the person can do mitzvahs or chas v'shalom commit sins. Either way, go in either direction. A person stops eating and stops drinking for a certain length of time, it's the end. So food is pretty important. The Torah begins with food. The first instruction that Hashem gave to man, what to eat, what not to eat. There's many trees here. All of them are available to you. There's one tree, stay away. Ki b'yoyim acholcha mimenu mois tomus. The day that you eat from that tree, you're going to die. Food is life. A person eats in order to live. And there are foods that can kill. A person can die from eating certain things, making certain mistakes. Interesting to note, the famous Rambam who says, eating a little bit of unhealthy food can do less harm and less damage to the person than overeating healthy food. No one disagrees with that. We'll talk a little bit more about that also. So we see that, again, the Torah began with this. Everything important in Judaism is associated with food. Shabbos, Yontif, a bris milah, a wedding, a siyum on a gemara, every meaningful celebration, everything important in Judaism goes together with food. Hashem's intent originally when he created man was to live. There was no need to die. There was no need to experience death. Because Adam and Chava partook from what they weren't supposed to, now it became impossible for a human being, with very rare exceptions, to be able to reach the peak of connection to Hashem without first experiencing death, having to die, having to return, the body having to return to earth, to its original state, and then the soul is able to rise up and make this deep, permanent, high-level connection to Hashem. So we see that food can go either way. The Gemara says in Brachas that during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Kaviyochol, Hashem makes it appear as if he eats. Even though we know that angels and certainly Hashem, there's no concept of eating, but the term that's used regarding the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, where sacrifices were brought, was that in this manner, we're kaviyochol, it's as if we're feeding Hashem. These sacrifices, the aroma, ishe reach nichoyach l'Hashem. Today, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, is there a substitute? Is there something today that we can do that can act as if we brought sacrifices on the altar, on the Mizbech, and the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara says, yes. Shulchanoi shel Adam, a person's table, mechaper kamizbeach, has the ability to atone and forgive sins the same way the Mizbeach did it in the Beis HaMikdash. When? If a person eats properly, if a person eats kosher, if a person eats healthy, if a person eats bikdusha, with holiness. One of the most important foods in existence, wine. There are different opinions in the Gemara, in the Medrash, regarding the Eitz Hadas, what the Eitz Hadas was. One of the opinions is, Sochata Anovin, that Chava squeezed grapes and gave that to Adam HaRishon to drink. It was grapes. And wine is the only food in existence that has its own bracha. Borei pri hagefen. Fruits, other things, borei pri etzra, covers all different kinds of foods. Wine is unique that this item is in a class of its own that has its own bracha. Wine can reach the highest places and it can take a person to the lowest places. The Gemara says wine is called tiroish, and the Gemara says it can be tehei roish. It can take a person to the top, to the head of the class. It can expand a person's consciousness. And this is why we bring in the Shabbos. The Gemara says that a Jew who observes Shabbos gets an additional soul, a neshama yisera, a nefesh yisera on Shabbos. Where is this neshama? Is it in my toes? Is it in my fingers? Where is it? When we put on tefillin in the morning, we say, Shaha neshama shebamoichi, the neshama which is in my brain. The das, the intelligence of a person, that's the essence of a neshama. So on Shabbos, we get an additional neshama, which means we get additional brain power. In order to make that happen, we make kiddush on Friday night on wine. There are people that can't drink wine for whatever reason. Person is permitted to use grape juice, but the wording in the Torah is preferably wine. Wine for kiddush, wine for havdalah. Wine to bring in the Shabbos, wine to lead the Shabbos queen out. Because this item is so holy and so big and so dangerous, it can go either way. Just like we have this bechira, We can go to the highest places and we can go to the lowest places. Wine can take a person to a very high place, expanded consciousness, and wine can cause a person to lose consciousness or to go into a state of confusion where the Gemara says everything becomes permissible. It unlocks the tongue of the person. The person says things they shouldn't say, and the person does things they shouldn't do, the worst sins, chas v'shalom. Wine is a sliding pond that can slide a person straight into all of these sins. In the second parasha of the Torah, we're told that there was an individual, Eile toldos noyach, noyach ish tzadik, tonim hoyu b'doyroysof, es holikim es halich noyach. That's saying a lot about a person in one sentence. Pretty big. And the Torah says he drank wine and he fell. And we find this throughout the Torah. So here, Rabbi Nachman, there's a chapter in Likutei Moran devoted to the topic of drinking in excess. Chapter 26 in the second half of Likutei Moran, Rabbi Nachman begins by saying wine is very important, very holy, and it's forbidden, 100% forbidden for a Jew to drink excessively. There's one exception only, which is Purim, and that applies only to those individuals who know that if they drink to excess, they're not going to say or do anything that they shouldn't say or shouldn't do. I have the privilege of living in Eretz Yisrael since 1987, 37 years, Baruch Hashem, living in Eretz Yisrael and celebrating Purim very often in the Breslov Shul in Mea Sharim. All the Breslov Shuls have a custom. We know that the Suda of Purim, the official Suda of Purim, is supposed to take place in the afternoon and go into the evening. In addition to that Suda, the custom in just about all the Breslov Shuls is that in the morning, when we read Megillah Esther, and after the Megillah reading, after everything, there's a Suda in Shul. There's music, there's drinking. Getting drunk on Purim is a tremendous elevation for the neshama. I've seen people get drunk on Purim and cry, and you hear words come out of their mouths, words expressing a love for Hashem, a love for their fellow Jew, a love for Torah that you don't hear all year round. The Gemara says, Nichnas yayin yotza soid. Wine goes in and secrets come out. It reveals what's inside the person. And if a person is really a quality individual, it reveals very high holy things. One of the leaders of Breslov in the previous generation, his name was Rabbi Avram Sternhartz, Rabbi Avram Kochav Lev. He came out of Russia when he was 73 years old and lived the last 20 years of his life in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. And he taught many of the leaders of the next generation in Breslov. Many of them were his students. And coming from Russia, many people know that Russian people who experience the Russian cold, it takes more to get them drunk than it takes a person from other places. And he would participate in the Suda and Shul. He would go home and he'd have people visiting him all day, bringing shalachmanis and coming to talk, coming to hear, coming to listen. And with each person that would come in, he would pour a drink, whether it was wine, whether it was whiskey, whatever it is, each person. And I spoke to rabbis who were there and said, he just got better, was revealing more Torah and deeper and more interesting, didn't lose an iota of concentration, of focus, just got stronger. You saw the mind expanding further and further, getting to higher levels. Again, that's only on Purim, not on Shabbos, not on Simchas Torah. In our generation today, unfortunately, we see that one of the nuclear weapons that the Yetzer Hara is using to harm Jews is this item, a mistake in this area of drinking excessively, a drink or five or seven as a way of welcoming the Shabbos. And in most cases, it doesn't have positive results. Most people who do this comes to the Friday night meal where the wife worked so hard to prepare the house for Shabbos and to prepare this meal and the kids are dressed and everything. And the husband makes kiddush and has a couple of drinks. And by the time he gets to the soup, his head is in the plate and there's no Shabbos meal. Or Shabbos morning, the Kiddush club during davening, before davening, after davening, and comes to coming home to a Shabbos meal, there's nobody to talk to. And a person has no idea that that's a major spiritual fall. So this is something that Rabbi Nachman put tremendous emphasis on, and it's been passed down throughout the generations. People that study his teachings know that this is not an option. It's not one of the choices. It doesn't exist at a wedding, at a simcha, a drink. A l'chaim, not two or three. It doesn't add, it subtracts. The Gemara says, "Kol hamoisif goyrea." There are certain things that if you add, you're subtracting. More is less, actually less. So this is an incredibly important point. Now, maybe we'll pause. Any questions, please?
Isn't Chassidus about harnessing the titles for Avodas Hashem rather than just breaking them?
Very good question. It wasn't only Rabbi Nachman. He was outstanding in this, about this issue of Shviras HaTaivos, breaking physical desires, all physical and materialistic desires, and trying to overcome completely Taivos Rois and Midos Rois. Rabbi Nachman himself said towards the end of his life that he did this. He followed the formula. He didn't originate that. The Arizal speaks about this. Other Sforim speak about this. That again, because the soul and the body are pulling in opposite directions, you can't have them both operating at the same time. There's a pasuk in Chumash, Ula'oim Mila'oim Ye'emotz, where it speaks about Yaakov Avinu and Lahavdil Esav Harosha. These two are on opposite ends of a seesaw. They can't both be on top at the same time. When Rome is flourishing, Yerushalayim is down. When Yerushalayim is up, Rome is down. Yaakov and Esav. The body and the soul, in the last shiur that Rabbi Nachman gave in his life, the Rosh Hashanah before he passed away on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And by Rosh Hashanah, he was 90% out of this world. He had, Rav Nosson Zal came into his room, there was a gigantic basin of blood that he had coughed up from the tuberculosis. And when he asked Rav Nosson Zal, should I give the shiur? Rav Nosson Zal, chas v'shalom, pikuach nefesh. But he said, but I've been waiting from the beginning of the summer for this. And look, there are so many people here. Rav Nosson Zal, who cares? Who cares? Your life is... And Rabbi Nachman kept going at it, and Rav Nosson Zal saw that he really wanted to do this, and he knew Rabbi Nachman knows the halacha. So he set up the chair and said, he said, okay, we're not going to put the chair in the middle of the shir, we'll put the chair right at the entrance to your room, so that if chas v'shalom in the middle anything goes wrong, you can get out of the big room in the second, you know, you're back into your own room. And he began speaking, and he spoke for a few hours. And one of the major topics in that shir, he speaks about mezayna de gufa and mezayna de nishmasa, feeding the body and feeding the soul. And the foods are the exact opposite. The body wants chocolate and cake, and the soul wants none of that. I don't want any of that. That's putting sugar in my gas tank. And they're both pulling. And Rabbi Nachman writes there that these two are going in opposite directions. And therefore, the less a person submits to the body, the more the soul has the ability to climb, to rise. And when he was young, he crushed the body. Everywhere he saw, he would swallow the food without chewing it to try to avoid experiencing the taste of the food, foods that he liked. He said he was a child, he liked eating, but he wanted to make sure that he's not engaging at all in the taiva aspect of it, in the physical pleasure, so as to allow his soul to experience maximum pleasure. And Rabbi Nachman said towards the end of his life, as a result of all of this, he came to the realization that there's a better way, a much better way, which is tefillah. Tefillah, prayer, can accomplish all the things that Shviras HaTaivos can accomplish quicker, better, no side effects, without destroying the body. This Rabbi Nachman writes. And Rabbi Nachman spoke to his students about not taking on any extra fasts. Now, the word extra means, doesn't mean other than Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, or the fourth. It means, for example, there's Bahab. There are, besides the standard fasts that most Jews are familiar with, there are some additional ones. During the 10 days of Tshuva, it's brought that there are people that fast a half a day during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. They try to get to 10 days. There's Bahab, Erev Rosh Chodesh, which are mentioned in Halacha as not obligatory. Rabbi Nachman said when a person has an opportunity like that, they should take advantage of it like a sweet cookie, meaning it's a privilege, but just like wine, within certain boundaries. No excessive fasting. And this is a very important point. But what do you mean? The Arizal writes 84 fasts. For certain sins, in order to atone for certain sins, it requires 84 fasts. The answer is what the Arizal said was 100% correct in his generation. The Shulchan Aruch says that there's been a weakening. Our bodies are weaker nowadays, and there's a warning to rabbis, a very serious warning, to be extremely careful when it comes to a fast day, to be extremely careful to try to be makel whenever possible, not to be strict when it comes to fasts or things like that. Now, one of the great rabbis in Breslov in the previous generation, Reb Elchanan Spector, who was from Poland before he came to Breslov, was a dayan, or a poisek, an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. And he came to Breslov and he went higher and higher. He once commented, and he said, because Rabbi Nachman stresses no eating or drinking before davening shachris. Even no drinking. Rabbi Nachman said he never drank water even before shachris. There's a pasuk in the Chumash, alay seichlu al adam, don't eat before you pray for your blood, before you pray for your life. In halacha, there are levels and levels regarding this. There's a level of not eating or drinking anything. The Shulchan Aruch says if a person cannot do that, person is weaker, they can have a drink, they can have coffee, but no milk, no sugar. Different opinions among the different poskim. Rabbi Nachman followed the Zohar HaKadosh in this, the opinion of the Zohar HaKadosh there, who said, no eating unless a person chas v'shalom is ill. It's brought that Reb Chaim Vitalzal, the closest student of the Arizal, at a certain point in his life was very sick and weak and had to drink in the morning. I don't recall whether he writes or other students write. What are they, crazy? They're bringing a proof from him when he was sick at a time like that. That has nothing to do with a person who's in normal health, who should not be eating or drinking at all before davening shachris. And that's one of the reasons for davening shachris on time, davening shachris within the Zman Kriya Shema, or davening neitz, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this rabbi, Reb Elchanan Spector, said, some people will look at this like a strictness, whereas other Orthodox Jews aren't as strict in this area. He said, on the contrary, Rabbi Nachman was being soft on us. He wanted us to have the benefit of fasting. He gave us tainus shores, the Gemara speaks about. Many people get up in the morning and I can't do anything before I have my coffee. And some people can't do anything before they have their bagels and lox or their... But by instructing us not to eat until after davening, every minute that the person is avoiding eating counts as a fast. So we're fasting, we're accumulating hours of fasting by not eating before shachris, not eating, not drinking before shachris.
The objective is not to elevate, but rather to break the desires?
The question is it breaking the desires or is it elevating the desire? You know, the answer is it's both. It's both. On Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, you know, during the 9 days we abstain from meat, that's elevating our soul. That's a form, and I'm going to come to that in a moment. That's elevating our soul. It's a tremendous plus. It's taking you, it's bringing you closer to Hashem. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, and when it's not a fast, you know, and when or a sudas mitzvah, anytime, or pas shachris, for example, the Gemara in Baba Metzia says that a person should try, and the Shulchan Aruch mentions this, that after davening shachris, before you go to learn, before, have some bread, pas shachris. And the Gemara says that this can save a person from 83 different illnesses. There's a lot written about this. We don't have the time. I'm touching on it. That there's a lot written about this. So when a person's eating bikdusha, that's accomplishing the same thing and even more so. Rabbi Nachman writes in chapter 55 in Likutei Moran, he speaks about fasting. When Amalek came and the Jews were going to go out to battle, how did they prepare? They prepared by fasting. When they would go out to battle, to war, they would fast first to show that we're putting our faith in Hashem. And again, by submitting, surrendering to Hashem, submitting, subduing the body in order to elevate the soul. So Rabbi Nachman writes there's a pasuk in Tehillim, V'chatoisi miponov tzorov. Hashem says, I will slice your enemies from before you. I'll remove your enemies from before you. The first letters of V'chatoisi miponov tzorov spell the word tzoin, fasting. That fasting is one of those things that helps eliminate enemies, klipois, sitrach, all of these kind of things. But Rabbi Nachman says, but there's achilas Shabbos, eating on Shabbos, which is equal to that and superior to that. superior to that son. There's a pasuk, lahashbis oyev umisnakin, to destroy, to annihilate the enemy and take complete revenge against them. Lahashbis miloshen Shabbos. Rabbi Nachman writes, achilas Shabbos is so special, so holy, that one of the things it accomplishes is eliminating enemies, you know, bringing about the downfall of our enemies. So here again, we need both. During the weekdays, less is more. Less is more. Less eating, less finicky about less what I eat. It doesn't matter what I eat during the weekdays. Whatever my wife serves, it's excellent. It's good because it's just a matter of sustaining the body. There's no significance to having this. I like this and I like this more. The more you suppress that, the more your soul can climb and fly. Shabbos, I'm shopping for foods that we like, that we enjoy, better quality, better this, because that's a tremendous elevation for the neshama. And Rabbi Nachman uses incredibly powerful wording, veda, and you should know, she'ikar kvoid Shabbos. One of the most important ways that we show respect for the Shabbos, hi ho achila, is the eating, the meals on Shabbos. Kemoy shekosuv, as the pasuk says, ichlu hayoim, eat today. Ki achila Shabbos yekora moed, eating on Shabbos is very precious. Ki hu kuloi elikus, kuloi koidish. It's not physical. It's not. It's complete spirituality, complete holiness. The kemavur, as it says, as he mentions previously in chapter 57. V'alkein mitzvah gedoyla laharbois besuda Shabbos. And therefore it's a major mitzvah that the meals on Shabbos should be different than the weekdays. During the weekdays, less indulgence, less time, less focusing on food is an elevation to the person. On Shabbos, another course, better food, more enjoying the food is all v'hu tikun l'chilul Shabbos. And this is one of the ways that a person repairs any desecration of the Shabbos that the person might have done throughout their life, knowingly, unknowingly. Now listen to these words. Ki mechilul Shabbos i'efshar lizoher. It's just about impossible for a Jew to avoid desecrating the Shabbos. The Mishneh Berurah writes in the introduction to Hilchos Shabbos that unless a person has studied these laws 70 times, it's very likely that they're making mistakes because the laws of Shabbos are very complex and very, it's not easy. Ki bikal efshar likoshel b'chil Shabbos chas v'shalom. It's very easy for a person to make a mistake and end up desecrating the Shabbos. V'hatikun hu al yedei hu achilo shel Shabbos. And the way that a person repairs this is by giving special significance to the eating on Shabbos. Now here again, there's an expression that's I've heard it from some people, man boch platzt. In French, that means my stomach is bursting. There are people that misinterpret this, or that they never read this, and they think it means that on Shabbos you're supposed to eat till it hurts. That's not what it means. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that those people who follow the rules during the weekdays and they don't finish their plate and they never eat to 100% fullness. The Rambam says to leave the table when you're three quarters full, never to fill up the tank to full. Those people on Shabbos should add more than that. But again, never going crossing a line where the person, chas v'sham, the meal takes them straight into bed. They can't do anything other than fall into their bed because they have no energy. Food is supposed to energize you. The Ben Ish Chai writes that a person learns on Shabbos. If a person learns 1 hour on Shabbos, it's like 1,000 hours of learning during the weekdays. And so too, every mitzvah that you do on Shabbos is 1,000 times as effective. You don't want to spend Shabbos day in bed. There's a concept of Shena b'Shabbos Taina that people who during the weekdays are up late studying Torah and that, you know, so on Shabbos, they're allowed to take it a little easier. they're allowed to. And again, there is a concept that even there are some people that even though during the weekdays they get up for Nate's Shabbat extra early, Shabbos they'll sleep a little later. Not everyone, but some people. It doesn't mean crashing. It doesn't mean eating till it hurts, where a person has to sleep 12 hours and a person loses out on the entire Shabbos afternoon. Shabbos afternoon is the holiest time of the week. We know that when it comes to Kedusha, you start from the bottom and you work, you climb, you work your way up. Friday night is holy. Shabbos morning is holier. Shabbos afternoon is climax. That's when we say those words, Va'anis filosi locha Hashem eis rotzayim. That's a time when a person can achieve the closest connection to Hashem is Shabbos afternoon. A person spending that time under the covers in excess, again, if a person woke up early on Shabbos and they're tired and they take a nap for an hour or two, depending on the person, everybody, I'm not saying one rule for each person to reserve quality time for the family, for Hashem, children, people have children. I remember growing up as a kid, my father worked very, very hard. He was a Holocaust survivor, came to America, didn't know any English. He would leave the house 6:30 in the morning after Shacharis, after breakfast, to take two or three buses to go to work. He had to be at work 8 o'clock in the morning as a cutter in a factory, cutting clothing. He worked from 8 to 6, and then he took a subway up to Harlem where he had a small laundromat, and he had to oversee what was going on there and come home typically 11 o'clock at night during the week. Shabbos, Friday night, we went to shul together. There was no such thing as not going to, on Shabbos, not going to shul. Shabbos morning, we went to shul. And in our neighborhood, the minyan started 9 o'clock. He made a deal with my sister and I that if we get up 8 o'clock, they bought special cake for Shabbos morning, and he would learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the basic, simple laws of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch with us Shabbos morning. Then went to shul Shabbos, came home, had lunch, and I'm hearing the kids, my friends outside playing. You can go play right after I hear what you studied in school. I want to know what you learned this week. And sometimes as a kid, it hurt a little. You know, I want to go play. I look at it now. That was a responsible parent. One of the reasons why we're in the pickle that we're in today, unfortunately, where so many kids are suffering in so many different ways, is because we parents don't realize the responsibility that we have to give quality time to our kids. And especially on Shabbos, if we're saying Shabbos is 1,000 times, Shabbos packs 1,000 times the punch of during the week, imagine letting a Shabbos go by and I didn't spend any time with my kids showing a genuine interest in what they're studying in school, what they're learning, the Torah that they're learning, this, that. And if I knew what I learned in school, it was great. We finished in an hour, whatever, went out to play. If I didn't know, my father would sit there and break his head to figure it out sometimes and to teach it to me. This is part of this package of realizing that Shabbos is huge. Now, here again, it comes to the different meals on Shabbos. Shabbos, people who overdo on Shabbos morning, people who go to daven 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock Shabbos morning and finish davening 12, 1 o'clock. And then there's a kiddush till 2 o'clock. And then they overeat that. Some people can't do that second meal even. Can't because I had too much cholent or too much liquor or too much that and Shabbos. Third meal is out of the question. That's ridiculous. Totally impossible. The Zohar HaKadosh has pages and pages emphasizing how important that third meal, each one of the meals is. And the third meal is an incredible deep connection to Hashem. If a person misses out on that, they're missing out on a major piece of Yiddishkeit, a major piece of connecting to Hashem. And then there's a fourth meal. There's the Suda of Dovid HaMelech, Malava Malka, which is also something very significant and special. It does say that if a person can't, you want to be that person. If the Torah says this is special, this is something that could correct any mistakes that I made in desecrating Shabbos, you want to miss out on that? I'm giving us a taste. There are about 10 or 15 chapters out of the approximately 400 chapters in the Keturah that focus on food, eating. Benefits? When it's done properly, we said it's like a mizbeach in and the negative effects if it's done improperly, chas v'shalom. Any questions?
So given that we're created in Hashem's image, what aspects of Hashem correspond to eating for us?
The korbonos, the Beis HaMikdash, the holy temple. You'd say a holy temple. What are animals doing there? A sheep and into a holy temple. That's what makes it so holy, that we have the ability, like he pointed out earlier, we human beings have the ability to elevate an animal and to elevate our animal, our body, to elevate it and make it ishe reach nichoyach l'Hashem. The word nichoyach is bigematria 72, which is one of the highest names of Hashem, the Shemite, that kind of thing. We have that ability. When we had a Beis HaMikdash, it was done, there were miracles. You were able to see Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. How do you see Hashem? There were 10 miracles taking place there. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, on a constant basis. Today, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. This is Shulchanoi Shalodah Mechaper Kemizbeach. The table, if it's done properly, if a person goes into Shabbos with joy and happiness, no screaming, no yelling, no fighting, and appreciating, expressing appreciation for every minute that the wife put into preparing the table, preparing each and every food that's being served. These are all the things that crank up the neshama to higher and higher levels. Please.
The last year I attended you gave in Highland Park, you talked about Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And one of the things I remember you brought up was people are lacking Simcha Shel Mitzvah, so they want to make up for it with more food, with more alcohol, etc. So how can we take that and increase it and then still be controlled in the eating and doing it in a wholly appropriate way where we still get Simcha out of it? We don't feel like, oh, now I have to limit myself and I'm missing out.
Good question. We speak about Simcha Shel Mitzvah and how holy Simcha is, and sometimes eating foods and more food, you're filling up your gas tank to your car. Fill it up. Some of the cars have warnings on them. Don't go over. When the Torah defines the concept that a Jew needs a rabbi, a Jew needs a tzaddik, the way it's presented is don't deviate to the right or to the left of what the rabbis are going to teach you. Meaning Hashem makes it perfectly clear that in this world, there's a right, left, center. Left and right can kill you. If you get the right amount, it's fabulous. If Rabbi Nachman said, Rabbi Nachman, who said mitzvah gedoyla liyos besimcha tomer, he was the champion of simcha in so many different ways. And if he said, don't you dare have that second or third drink, he understood because that's not going to give you simcha. It's fake. There's fake news and there's fake simcha. Look what happens to the guy who gets giddy and he's dancing, and the next day crash. He's depressed for a day, for a month, or he gets divorced, or he goes to jail, or he dies, or worse. So that's the answer. That in simcha, a person needs a teeth. There's holy simcha and there's unholy. The Shema Kodesh, one of the great rabbis, mentions that Yishmael had a wife that was called Mochalas. I'm sorry, Esav married, he was the son-in-law of Yishmael. A winning combination, Esav and Yishmael together. And Esav's wife was called Mochalas Bas Yishmael. So the Shulchan Aruch Kodesh says, Mochalas is Meloshon Mecholos. Mecholos means dancing. It says in the future, Hashem is going to make a Mochel for the Tzadikim. Mecholos is dancing. Dancing can be holy, super holy, and dancing can be a one-way ticket to mixed and improper kind of dancing. So all of these things, you know, the excess is dangerous problem, and that's our test. Our test is to open throttle, that here again, not to avoid, not to drink, or to have wine for those that can on Shabbos, but to have it only in a positive, healthy way. The Zohar Kodesh reveals a secret. In the Beis HaMikdash, there were the curtains in the Beis HaMikdash. How do you say 12 in Hebrew? Shtemesrei is 12. How do you say 11? That's one of the ways. Ashtei Osar. In the Chumash, it says Ashtei Osar. Shtei Osar is 12. You put an ayin, you add the letter ayin in front, and you're reducing, you're going down. 70 is associated with the 70 nations of the world, the 70 nations of the Goyim. It represents the Sitra Achra, you know, that negative force. Where the Zohar Kodesh uses this as an example that you think you're adding, you're subtracting. So here again, Kiddush Klal, even when a person can afford it, to be careful, boundaries, always boundaries. But people who can't afford it and are going out and buying $200 bottles or whatnot, because of keeping up with it, because of all kinds of improper reasons, it's not going to have a positive effect. And to see kids, to see teenagers, you know, to go to a religious wedding and to see supposedly religious teenagers going over and not taking a cup, taking a bottle and bringing it to the table and doing the bottle. It's part of the darkness that we're experiencing today in exile. With all the lights that we have, the Torah defines us as in a state of hastara, shabbatol hastara. Please.
So I have two questions. The first one, fasting for Shacharis and the different derivations thereof. Okay, so you can have coffee, but you can't add to it. What about just water? So where does drinking water when you wake up so that you know you have the energy to daven properly, but not to eat, come into play here?
In the Chumash, it says, loy soichlu, you know, don't. And the Zohar Kodesh says, no eating, no drink. It's assumed no eating, no drinking, period. And others far right about this. Rabbi Nachman said, I didn't even drink water. I never drank water before davening. For those who can. And sometimes it's a matter of training. A person gets used to something, they get addicted. The term addiction is a red line. Not just drugs or internet, but addicted to anything. I have to have my coffee. Person who has to have their coffee is crossing a line. I have to have Hashem. I have to have tefillin. I have to light candles. I don't have to have coffee. I'm not committed. I'm not obligated to coffee or anything else. Nothing else. I'm not a servant. You know, I'm not subservient to anything. I don't want anything else controlling me other than Hashem and the Torah, that kind of thing. For those who can, in Breslov, I've seen that for those who can, they won't even drink water before davening. And they daven and they put energy in. You know, there are those who can't, or for those who are used to having coffee and they take it, they take it down a notch and say, I won't. But just plain water, it's a very good thing. You know, each person on their level.
So let's say a person gets to the point where they're like, you know what, this doesn't serve me in terms of the fact that I might make the wrong decisions from drinking. They determine that they're an alcoholic. At what point, if ever, should a person consider returning to Yayin Kodesh? Where do we draw the line? Because that's a very dangerous equation. But I mean, it's described that grape juice, it's okay. But it's really preferable to have wine. So is there a point where a person could feel safe in returning? Or is there a point where if you close that door, it really is okay? And if you know that and you think, oh, well, I wish I could have wine, but I don't trust myself. I trust Hashem, but not myself. Is it really comfortable or are you really foregoing something?
It's an individual. That's something that I wouldn't say without knowing who the person. In most cases, I would say in most cases, a person who had a serious problem with that, by their drinking grape juice, they're getting all the full benefits of wine. Because for them, the Gemara says that we say to a person who has an issue with this, keep back 2,000 feet from a vineyard. Don't go near a vineyard, period. So it's definitely okay for those people not to touch wine at all. Unless the person is really, really, really confident that it won't, you know. I remember one of my rabbis smoked. Rabbi Nachman spoke against, during his time, against smoking. No smoking, no smoking. One of my Breslov rabbis who lived in Russia and had a very, very difficult life, he said he smoked in Russia. And at one point, he threw it away. Cold turkey, threw it away. It was the end. Years later, many years later, he came to the United States on a mission, a very important mission. And he took a cigarette and he smoked. And he said to me at the time, you know, that for me, it's not an issue. I'm doing it now, you know, but I know I put this away and it will never again control me, you know, et cetera, you know. And sure enough, I never saw, years later, I never saw him go near it again. It's more of an individual thing. And when we get to that level where we can be, the Gemara warns when it comes to certain areas, Ein apotropos laroyos, the Gemara says when it comes to men and women mixing, boys and girls mixing, no one can feel safe. No one can be positive that the Satan won't set them up for failure. So certain areas, better to play it safe.
we find that the Rebbe did have a pipe and he smoked, like, I don't know how often.
Good point. The Baal Shem Tov, there were certain tzaddikim who it was said they knew how to offer k'toiris. They knew by smoking a pipe how to tap into the k'toiris in the Beis HaMikdash. But here again, Rabbi Nachman told his student in Chayim Aran, no smoking, and his students stuck to it. My rabbi, I was privileged to have a rabbi when I first came to Rabbi Rosenfeld, Zichron Avracha, smoked. I feel terrible till today that I didn't ask him why and what and how. I never asked him, and I don't know among all my friends if any of it. He got all of his students, all of them, who came to him in their 20, you know, late teens, 20s, who were smoking, going to Brooklyn College, smoking. Every one of them stopped smoking when they became a student of his.
Even though he himself did.
And I think back at the, you know, like, wow, and I'm sure if he did it, there must have been some reasons, you know, some things.
If Moshe Feinstein was calling him up to ask about the halakha questions, I'm sure he was smoking.
Exactly. So there are exceptions in all kinds of situations. There are exceptions. But for us, people like us, to be careful. Question. Yom Kippur, which in certain respects is the holiest day of the year. No food. If food is so important...
Trying to be like
Malachim,
and they don't eat?
Yes.
We have Purim to balance it out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're close. Think for a minute. You don't have to go as far away as Purim. Erev Yom Kippur, right. The day before Yom Kippur, is one of the most important times to eat. Erev Yom Kippur. They say about the Vilna Gaon, I believe it's true, that he kept the sucking candy in his mouth throughout the day. He didn't want to stop eating for a moment on Erev Yom Kippur. The Gemara says that a person who eats on Erev Yom Kippur gets credit as if they fasted 2 days. So everything is a balance.
Right, so that's because I was thinking, of course, there's a sort of sacrifice beforehand, but Nevertheless, on Yom Kippur itself, first of all, they say that, I mean, the halacha is that even before Yom Kippur begins, but after the Surah Mafsekas, you have to do Vidoy again.
Exactly.
Or not again, but that counts as the first of 10 Vidoys of your, or the second after the Mincha there of Yom Kippur.
Yes.
So you do Vidoy before the Surah for Mincha, and then Vidoy after the Surah, but before Yom Kippur begins. So I guess the first of 10 vidoys of Yom Kippur is Mincha Erev Yom Kippur, and then it's the Suda, so that counts as sort of attached to Yom Kippur itself.
Sure, for sure. Again, we need to know that everything has a time and a place. Everything has a time and a place. There's a time to fast, there's a time to eat, there's a time to cry, there's a time to laugh, a time to dance. And the Torah and the tzaddikim are the ones that direct us. The same thing, put on a light. It's such a wonderful thing. Putting a room is dark and the kid can't see anything, and put on a light. Do it at 5 p.m. on Friday afternoon, it's a mitzvah. Do it 5:15, it's skila, chayiv skila. The same exact act. It's time and space, you know, everything. And this is why we have a Torah, and this is why we have tzaddikim, to guide us how to succeed. This narrow bridge, Rabbi Nachman said that the world is a narrow bridge. You want to get across a narrow bridge? Don't lean to the right or left. Stay centered, you'll make it, you'll get through.
People do intermittent fasting. Some people do like Mondays and Thursdays, willfully.
Mondays and Thursdays is one of the things, again, that's mentioned in the Gemara, it's mentioned in Halacha, that there is such a concept. The person needs to be careful. It requires care, you know, why the person's doing it. And certainly if they are doing it, not to publicize it. Rabbi Nachman writes to be extremely careful whenever a person's taking on any extra item in Avodas Hashem. The minute people become aware of it, it loses its effectiveness, Chas V'Shalom, and sometimes it can work against the person. Intermittent fasting, if a person is overweight, let's say, and they're trying to overcook, they're trying to get rid of the excess weight because they know it's unhealthy physically and spiritually, and they take on such a thing, it could be okay, but we mentioned Pas Shachris, for example. which is a very special holy thing. A person needs to judge carefully and ask a question if they're not sure. Should I do the intermittent fasting or I'm missing out on Pas Shachris? A person that eats Pas Shachris in the morning, they're making 6 brachas. Al Matias Yadayim, Hamotzi, and 4 brachas of Birchas Hamazon. One of the rabbis once said that this is huge. This is huge. There was a story with, I think, the first Karlina Rebbe, that he had, and we'll close with this because we need to daf Marav, and it's almost Erev Shabbos. We got to get ready for Shabbos. That he had a student who was wealthy, and sometimes wealthy people have some chutzpah, you know. And this student insisted he wants to have a meal with the Rebbe. He wants to, you know. And the Rebbe pushed them off until he saw Kundera, and he said, okay, fine. And they had a meal together, a breakfast together, something like that. And they ate and spoke and everything. And at the end of the meal, this student says to the Rebbe, you know, I want to thank you. I really appreciate this. But please don't take this the wrong way. I thought that I'd see, you know, incredible differences between your eating, my eating. We both eat nicely and everything. And the Rebbe smiled and said, you're right. You know, there's a lot of similarities. He said, one difference I'd like to point out. He said, you make a bracha so that you can eat. I eat so that I can make brachas. Both are doing the same thing. Both are making a blessing and eating. One person, their focus, their thrill, their pleasure is that I can say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. They realize that each word there, I'm pushing a button. I'm putting $100 bill into my bank account. And, you know, and that's under, you know, that's insulting you. Compared to how holy it is making a bracha, you know, saying a bracha properly. Birkas Hamazon, what's written about Birkas Hamazon, you know, if it's done properly. The focus sometimes, you know, really knowing where we're at. For more information, open the books. We have a website, breslovtorah.com, that has a few thousand shiurim, Baruch Hashem, many on this topic and other topics. I hope you'll indulge. I have some cards here that have my contact information if anybody wants to be in touch, and maybe we could have Marav.
Yeah,
great.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.